the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
John Gibbons, great to have you back and back in the country. You were away overseas.
Thanks very much, Matt. Yeah, delighted to be back.
Okay, now there are people who want to know immediately, what mode of transport did you use?
Well, the trip in question involved getting the ferry from Rosslare to Dunkirk and then driving by electric car, of course, Matt, from Dunkirk through Belgium and into Holland. So we stayed, we were based in Amsterdam, and then from Amsterdam did a sort of a holiday, although it was a tiny bit of a busman's holiday, to tell you the truth. We visited exciting places like the Wageningen University Research to look at their agricultural research facility. I visited a cucumber facility on another day. I visited a solar farm on another day. All your typical holiday stuff, really, you know. And but yeah, so that was our little Dutch outing.
Just one practical thing there. How difficult was it to find charging points to your electric vehicle, and how far were you able to get on a single charge?
Yeah, it was a piece of cake. There are electric charging points. Practically, you can almost throw a stick, Matt, and hit a charging point. And a lot of them are high-speed charging points. In fact,
how quick?
Oh, 150 kilowatts up to 400. So these ones, you're talking about charging in, you know, 20 minutes, maybe 15 minutes, depending on how much
charge. And how are they priced?
Similar to Ireland, you're looking at 60, 70 cent a kilowatt, which is fine. You know, it'd probably be a little similar to petrol. In fact, one funny incident, well, I thought it was funny. We were going back through Belgium and we pulled into a service station, which indicated that it had EV charging. So I drove straight past the forecourt looking for the EVs, which used to be in around the back. Only had to double back and realise that they'd removed half of the eight petrol channels were now... So of the eight channels, four of them, four double channels, were now purely EV, and the other four were split between petrol and diesel. Now, I thought to myself, wow, there's a change. It was so big right in front of me, I literally drove straight past it. So yeah, it's happening.
Okay, and in particular, they have a much smaller landmass in the Netherlands. I think it's about the size of Munster.
Munster and a bit of Connacht, yeah.
Munster, but with a population about three times the size.
Yeah, about 17 million people. And I suppose Holland, and of course one third Holland, Matt, is underwater, as in below sea level. That's going to be a challenge for the decades ahead. And I suppose the Dutch, they're famous engineers. They're bloody good at planning and execution. And I suppose that was one of the things I wanted to look at. For example, Holland is the world's second largest food exporter after the US, which is absolutely mind-boggling. You know, in Ireland, we're doing about, was it 18, 19 billion euro yes. in exports. The Dutch are doing over 100 billion.
Of what?
Of everything. Mostly they have a massive horticultural sector. They also, by the way, have a big livestock sector. They're huge exporters in pork, meat as well. And they also have, of course, famously, they're a huge flower, as in,
do they have massive emissions because of all that agriculture?
Yeah, I mean, their biggest, just like Ireland, actually, very similar problems. In fact, one of the guys I was talking to in Wageningen University Research is making the point that they have very similar nitrogen problems that we have here in Ireland. And, you know, the only solution that they see for it is to reduce the herd over there. And they do get, and I suppose because Holland is within the continental landmass, emissions and overflow, we saw that in Denmark, for example, it's pressure from your neighbours, from your pollution spilling into your neighbours, that often causes the real pressure. The problem here in Ireland is we don't have any European neighbours to complain about our direct emissions here locally. But yeah, I mean, it is a phenomenally productive country on so many levels. And the one that really turned my head, Matt, was solar PV.
Well, I was just going to get to that. Like, how do they actually generate enough electricity for 17 million people?
Yeah, they generate actually a hell of a lot. Well, first of all, in Ireland, we've got a little over 2 gigawatts of solar energy. That's a peak. So 2 gigawatts would be the equivalent of about 2 and a bit money point power stations at peak. That's what we have in Ireland. They had that in Holland about 10 years ago. Now, since then, they've rolled out 31 to 32 gigawatts. So they have 15 times more solar than we've managed in Ireland. And this, as you said, Matt, is in a land area where they're competing with agriculture and with other land uses. And they've managed to do it, again, with a lot of creativity, a lot of ingenuity. For example, they have a massive amount of farm-based solar mounted on these huge sheds. As driving through Holland, the things that you notice are there's wind turbines everywhere. nobody bats an eyelid about them. They're just simply a fact of life, number one. And they're not up on the top of mountains. They're just everywhere. And they're part of the continuing landscape. That's one thing. The second thing is every large farm and commercial building that you pass is smothered in solar panels. So they've done it, huge deployment. Now, the other thing is that 45% of all the privately owned homes in Holland, 45% have solar PV. The equivalent figure for Ireland is about somewhere between 5 and 7%.
How have people afforded that?
I mean, they afforded, Matt, because putting solar PV on your rooftop is the best thing that you can do. They have incentive schemes and so on, but not much better than Ireland. They do have a scheme that allows you to, you get a sort of a discount or a, some of the tax on it is given back from the government. But I looked at the numbers on it and they're not drastically different to Ireland. It's simply, it's a bit like the Norwegians with electric vehicles. They just went for it because it makes compelling sense. They also have deployed more than twice the wind energy that we have here in Ireland. So put those two together. And what I found fascinating as well,
Is there wind energy onshore or offshore?
It's a combination of both. Like I told you, wind turbines all around the place in the landscape. And they're, and for example, you pass a farm and literally 50 to 100 metres from the farm buildings is a whopping great solar or wind turbine right beside it. So they don't have this kind of setback anxiety that we seem to suffer from in Ireland, that it has to be 500
metres. Could we do what they've done?
Of course we could. Absolutely.
No, we couldn't.
Well, of course we could.
No, we couldn't.
If we didn't have the likes of our Taoiseach telling us that instead of doing this old solar nonsense, why don't we build a nuclear power plant? Or what he really means, of course, Matt, is why don't we talk about it for 20 years and do nothing? I think going to a country like Holland, where they've had to battle with the elements, they've had to contend with the rising sea levels, you know, they're a technocratic society driven by engineers and listening to experts. Unfortunately, that doesn't tend to hold sway here quite so much.
Yeah, I think it might be more than that. I mean, do they have people objecting to the location of wind turbines and solar farms?
Well, on that, again, speaking with the Dutch Solar Industry Association about it, I asked that question, do you get a lot of you know, NIMBY pushback? And he said the key to success for solar in Holland is that most of the farms are less than 10 megawatts. Now, to translate that into land, Matt, that would be the equivalent of about a 20-hectare farm, which is really small, 20 hectares. So if you had a farmer listen to us this afternoon, most of them would have more than 20 hectares. So what they've done is they've rolled out huge numbers of relatively small farms, and they seem to have sort of slipped under the radar of public objection. And that's the point he made. He said there's only four solar farms in the entire of Holland producing more than 100 megawatts. They would be your kind of your huge commercial ones, but they've done it everywhere. Rooftop solar.
And are people managing to sell power back into the grid? Because complaints here, try and do that in Ireland and you don't get paid for it.
Well, you should be getting paid for it. I mean, we have this, it's called the feed-in tariff in Ireland. It should be somewhere 18 to 20 cent a kilowatt, which again is comparable to Holland. They do have problems, Matt, don't get me wrong. For example, there's a huge waiting list. They have grid congestion over there. And initially, of course, renewables were blamed for grid congestion. But again, if this doesn't sound familiar, data centres, they have a big competition for grid access, where hospitals and schools are having to wait in line behind data centres for exactly the same reason here in Ireland, because, of course, data centres are a quick, easy win for the government, for the state.
Okay. Was it very warm when you were over there? What was the temperature like?
No, it was fine. There was nothing. The temperatures were probably low 20s, low to mid 20s. We didn't encounter anything.
What was happening in the rest of Western Europe?
Yeah, no. In fact, I think we got out and away safely back to Ireland before the big heat waves hit. I know we've had temperatures, rising to 40 degrees. And I know you, Matt, I know you were in Croatia a couple of years ago. I remember you writing about it. I was in France, caught in a heat wave a few years ago. And for those of your listeners who haven't been out and about in 40 degrees centigrade, don't do it. It is absolutely appalling. And we're just there as tourists. Imagine trying to live and work in these conditions. So, yeah,
it's creating a big debate in continental Europe about air conditioning.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned this with Sive O'Neill when you were away, but this whole thing, it's become a big issue in France. The left do not want air conditioning because mass air conditioning, because they say it only increases electricity generation, which makes the situation worse, is self-defeating. But those on the right are saying you have to have it. You cannot live without it. Where do you stand?
It's become one of these political touch points. You see the far right in France and elsewhere taking up the cudgel. The very parties that are denying climate change are now, you know, demanding air conditioning. So put those two things together in your head. It is difficult. But of course, the issue with air conditioning, as we know, is that it, next to data centres, it's the world's fastest growing source of energy consumption. And there are projections from the IEA all the way out to 2050 about massive increases in the amount of electricity required for air conditioning. Now, the issue here really, Matt, is that some people, if they don't have access to air conditioning, are going to die. Yet, what we see in France, in Europe, and particularly in the third world, there is somewhere between 1.4 and 2 billion people who today need access to air conditioning who can't afford it. So what you find is air conditioning tends to be rolled out for those who can afford it. So that makes life bearable for better off people, but increasingly unbearable for others. And of course, there is something to bear in mind that when you've got an air conditioning unit, say in a shop or whatever, and you've cooled the shop nicely, you're blasting the hot air that you've pulled out of the shop. You're actually pushing it out and you're increasing the temperature on the street. So there's no easy wins here, Matt. I mean, I'm not anti-air conditioning, and I certainly remember on one occasion in France, you know, literally practically hugging an air conditioning unit. Having been out in those high temperatures for a couple of days, I was dizzy.
In the couple of minutes we've left, we had James Brown, the housing minister, here on Tuesday confirming the government's new plans in relation to one-off housing in rural Ireland. I said, that got your temperature up, did it?
It did indeed. We've talked about it before, Matt. I think it's a terrible idea. It flies completely in the face of expert advice. I go back to our Dutch friends. Technocratic societies, listen to your experts, resource them properly and follow their advice. What we're doing here is this is just simple populism. Fianna Fáil did the same thing back in 2005 with Dick Roach, where they went on a free-for-all, and we see where that led us. We're back again trying to win votes in rural Ireland. What they're doing with the unplanned, unconstrained rollout of one-off housing is they're essentially, you know, a quick fix political problem today, and they're setting down long-term structural
problems.
Doesn't
it allow people to continue to live in their own localities? Doesn't it also provide them with cheap land, given that the cost of buying land and building land in a house is so expensive?
I mean, if the government were really serious about easing pressure on housing, which we all want to see, we would, for example, have proper controls on things like Airbnb rentals, and we would be accelerating the refurbishment of vacant housing. We have our cities and towns and villages full of derelict buildings. That's where we need to focus it. The issue, Matt, is that when you suburbanise rural Ireland, you drag the life out of our towns and villages. You hollow them out. You end up with pubs shut down. You end up with local shops closed down. And people living in once-off ribbon development in rural Ireland, what they're ending up doing, they're into forced car dependence. They have to typically drive past the local village on the way to the Aldi or the Lidl in the next big town. So, and also, the communities get hollowed out. We used to have towns and villages with thriving communities. And this once-off housing, people think in Ireland that once-off housing has been here since old God's time. Most of the one-off housing, Matt, in Ireland has been built since 1970.
Thank you, John Gibbons, for your return. Look forward to seeing you next Thursday as well.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.